Hello, everybody. Just doing a mic check here. It's 1600 or 4 p.m. Eastern, rather. Just doing a unscheduled impromptu security space, and yeah, I last couple of weeks has been. Oh, let me mute my computer so you don't hear that. Yeah, last couple of this week and last week has been super busy with other teams, projects, and individuals and stuff. So, I've been a little, last week I've just been not on top of my game with getting these spaces out, which I think they're very helpful. And yeah, I usually do schedule them in advance. Going forward, though, I will be doing, just because how many projects and teams I'm working with now, I'll be doing, making sure I'm doing at least I will be doing a minimum of one per week. Sunday mornings, probably 9:30, just because it gives me a little time after me and my wife get back from the barn and putting out hay and stuff like that. Also, every week I may schedule one during the week sometime as well, mornings or evenings. But I'll have at least one per week on Sundays and hopefully one during the week as well, either early morning or late evening during the week, just to give other people in other time zones, opportunities to be in the space. I don't have a, if you're listening to the recording, I don't have an organized agenda to go through things today. There are some things I'll talk about around virtualization, different things we've seen in the space lately, and other cool things I'm working on for documents or videos to provide the community around multi-factor authentication, stuff like that. So I'll sprinkle in things like that throughout here. But mainly I'll be outside of that. The other main thing is I'll just be waiting to see if somebody wants to hop in and ask any questions or share anything useful for the community and so forth. But for the moment, I will go on mute. And again, if you're listening to recording, again, this is not an This call recording does not have an agenda for the entire hour, so just if you want to check, if you are checking this one out, just skip through it, and there will be helpful things throughout the call, just not fluid. So yeah, just skip through. So, hello. Yeah, so I've been on mute for maybe 8 minutes or so. I've been just kind of looking around, see if anybody wanted to join. You know, Pete, it's Sunday. I didn't schedule it. Super Bowl's on. I'm sure plenty of people are watching that. And people are babbling on about UFOs or something or other. So, sure, people are all distracted by that. The one thing I wanted to mention though is I put out a I tweeted a YouTube short that I did this morning, which are videos less than 1 minute and in an annoyingly decided for ratio by YouTube. It has to be 1080 by 1920, so it's just a vertical narrow video, which is very annoying. I don't know why they can't just be regular videos less than a minute. But I did that on Windows Sandbox, and you know, one thing I saw recent, I saw some things recently that kind of brought virtualization back to the forefront of my mind. And I was at a work thing not long ago, and someone was like, "Oh, hey, Kyle, look, you're using VirtualBox. Did you know you could do this thing on Windows?" And I actually didn't know because over the last year or so, I kind of started using Windows less often than I'm been using my Pop OS Linux computer. And so they showed me this thing called Windows Sandbox, right? And it's pretty cool. It's super duper easy to set up, but it's basically a it's a virtual Windows system, all right? So on Windows, if you go to add or remove or turn features, rather turn features on or off, right? Because if you go to add or remove features, that's something different. But if you go to turn Windows features on or off, you'll scroll down at the bottom of the list and you'll see Windows Sandbox. And if you enable that, you just hit the check mark and hit OK and then restart your system. Then you'll be able to search for Sandbox on your computer. It'll be labeled Windows Sandbox. You just click that and within 5 to 10 seconds, it loads a virtual machine of Windows, right? So it takes the OS you're using, whether it's Windows 10 or Windows 11, and creates a virtual machine. And it's pretty cool because by default, it is isolated or not attached to your network or your system, right? So, you know, for the most part, it is isolated. So it's pretty cool for if you want to, go in there and if you want to run a trial application that you don't want to install in your main system just quite yet because you're not sure you want to use it, you can go in that Windows Sandbox and install that application, that trial version, and test it out on there and use it and, you know, see if you like it, right? You can also use it if you want to change some configuration on Windows, all right? If you want to try something in the registry or if you want to change some personal user settings, and but you want to do that but not affect your main system because you don't know what the outcome will be, right? So you can use Windows Sandbox to try that out. Or you know, there's other things you can do with it as well. You could use it to, if you get some, if you're going to a website that you've never been to or opening a document you've never, you know, you're not sure about, so this website or document could potentially malicious. I would say that if you are experienced in virtual machines and isolation and malware, then that is a good option, right? To try Windows Sandbox out to run this in. if you're not experienced in it, I would consult somebody like myself or somebody else in the community or in the cybersecurity space to help you. But, you know, by design, it is to test out things that you don't want to affect your system, whether it's non-malicious or malicious, or just trying an application out, things like that, right? And I think outside of the malicious side, right, just testing applications out and changes to your system and things like that, I think it has a huge benefit, right? And it is literally the easiest virtual environment to set up ever, right? So if you're not, this is a great thing to use for anybody that has little to zero experience with virtual machines, virtualization, isolation, etc., right? Or sandboxing and so forth. So I would say and it's good for really for anybody. I'm experienced in those things, and I know that I'll use Windows Sandbox a lot, right? I think it's pretty cool. I really like how easy it is to set up. But then there are other things. If you're looking to get more involved and have your own virtual environment set up, and you don't mind going through the work and learning and effort and so forth, then I use VirtualBox. It's a free virtualization application. It works on multiple operating systems. I personally use it on my Linux system, but it works on Windows as well. It's pretty cool, right? If you get a Windows image or a Linux image or whatever, right? You can load that into VirtualBox and run your own virtual machines. I actually use Windows 10, Windows 11, and Ubuntu virtual machines and VirtualBox to do a lot of my YouTube demo videos. There are challenges with that, right? Because there's certain things in there that aren't usable to you, at least in VirtualBox, right? Like UEFI, and if you're trying to set up things like drive encryption and so forth, you can set those things up in a virtual environment, like with VirtualBox, but there are things you'll have to do to make it work that you wouldn't have to do otherwise on your normal daily Windows system, right? VMware is a wonderful tool. Most of the tech space uses it to some degree. You can use the free version, Windows. I think it's VMware Workstation, not Windows, just VMware Workstation. I think that's, or actually, I think VMware Server is the free version. I think VMware Workstation, you can use that, and it does have some cost to it. I don't think it's all that expensive, but it does cost something. But I think VMware Server, if I'm not wrong, actually, let me look on here. I can tell you because, actually, you know what? I think I am wrong. I think it's VMware Workstation Player. So VMware Workstation Player. And the version I have right now is 16. I'm actually not sure if there's a newer version right now, but you could technically run one VM in there at a time. I have a few VMs I have in there set up, and I really just use it to run one VM in it actually, for the most part, because I use VirtualBox for running multiple VMs at the same time. But VMware Workstation Player is an option. Then if you want to pay more, you can get into other VMware options. If you want to go to vSphere, that's the full-blown enterprise version. Someone commented on my YouTube short I tweeted out earlier for Windows Sandbox. They said also Hyper-V Manager. So on Windows, if you go to that same place, turn Windows features on or off, there is another checkbox in there where you can enable Hyper-V Manager. And that's pretty cool because it's free. You just install it. I think I installed it, then I had to restart, and then I could run it. I mean, it took probably the same amount of time as setting up Windows Sandbox. The only difference is, you have to actually configure your own virtual machines in there, just like you do in any other virtualization or VM software, right? So I had to load my ISOs, things like that. I have to configure them and so forth. So that's just like with VirtualBox, you have to be comfortable with it, know how to use it, etc. So that's why I was mentioning Windows Sandbox earlier this morning, because it takes all of that work and just gets rid of all of it, right? You just start up Sandbox, done. So it's really great for anybody, but especially great for those that really don't have that technical experience or don't want to, right? which is fine. That's why there are things out there like Sandbox. I actually don't know, and I should have probably looked this up, but I'll admit it. I don't know if there is something similar like that on Linux. I mean, I could definitely do things like that on Windows, but I'm not sure if there's like a something in the package manager or something that you can, install that. I'm sure there is, right? Because there's all sorts of community built things out there. But anyway, and then to clarify a term, if you hear hypervisor, then you hear Hyper-V. Those aren't the same. They are, right? They are the same, but they aren't. What the difference is, hypervisor is the technology. So, VMware is a hypervisor, VirtualBox has hyper is a hypervisor, Windows Sandbox. I'm not sure. I guess I would call that a hypervisor too. Hypervisor is just a general term, right? But Hyper-V is the Microsoft word that they use, right? So if you set up Hyper-V on Windows, you're using the Microsoft technology or Microsoft application Hyper-V, right? But you're still using the technology hypervisor. Same thing with anything on Linux, etc., right? And there's a lot of videos out there on setting these things up. If you're looking to go beyond Windows Sandbox and start learning your own stuff or setting up your own virtual machines, I would say VMware Workstation Player and VirtualBox are the next two things you should check out. And then that Hyper-V Manager thing on Windows. So really three of them. Personally, I would start with VirtualBox just because that's the one, I don't know. I like to use that one because I use my Pop! OS Linux system all the time now, and I like running VirtualBox in there. It's just my preference, right? I think that's probably, the thing I wanted to mention about virtualization. I'm gonna go on mute for a few minutes and see if anybody hops in, and maybe I'll share something else. All right. Hang tight if you're listening to this recording, and skip probably 5 minutes at a time. Going, skip 5 minutes if you don't hear me talking. Go another 5 minutes forward, and wait till you hear me talking again. And keep listening, right? So you don't waste your time listening to, so many minutes in an hour long call. That's just dead space, right? Okay. What's up, Gold Rush? I was just sitting here rambling a whole lot about virtualization, VM options and stuff like that. I didn't schedule my call this week, and I know the Super Bowl and UFOs and everything are running rampant, so you're the only person I've had so far. I'll hop you. I'll bring you up real quick if if you want to hop up, man. I'll share with you that virtualization stuff if you hop up on and want to chat for a minute. I always double invite people because almost all the time when I invite someone just one time, it doesn't actually work for me. And I think it's because I'm using Twitter on Android. But yeah. Hey, there you are. How's it going, dude?
Going. I'm just kind of being lazy today, and I saw your space. I figured I'd dip in and see what you were covering today.
Yeah, thanks, man. Did you hear me babbling to you before you hopped up on speaker?
It sounds like you said you're covering some virtualization.
Oh, yeah. I didn't schedule the space, so I don't have anybody in here today. I just started the space out of nowhere, and I know UFOs are flying around the world and Super Bowl starting, and so I didn't really expect anybody to join, but yeah, I was actually talking about virtualization because I was in a thing for work a couple of weeks ago in Virginia, and someone shared something with me, and I've seen a lot of people talking about different issues with accessing files and having, so forth. Anyway, a lot of things kind of brought back to the forefront of my mind to talk about virtualization. So I figured I did a thing this morning, a YouTube short, and I figured I'd do the space, and then I think on Friday there's a couple of guys I'm going to do a YouTube video discussion on different virtualization options, right? Because not that many, really, that not that many people are familiar with the benefits of using it, and furthermore, even if they did, not experienced enough to actually use it, right? I mean, the average person can barely install an operating system just because that's not their forte, right? They want a computer that just works. So by default, they're probably not going to know how to use a virtual machine either. And I ran across this thing in Windows not long ago that a guy from work shared with me about. So if you go to Windows, if you search on Windows for turn Windows features on or off, if you go down on the bottom of the list, you'll see a checkbox in there for Windows Sandbox. And if you turn it on, and restart you just checkbox, hit OK, and restart your computer. When you bring that back up, you search for Sandbox, you click it, and in 5 to 10 seconds, you have a virtual machine. You have a Windows virtual machine, right? So it's actually pretty cool because it is actually an isolated VM. I did some research on it, and it is quite isolated. It's not actually attached to your network at all. So it's really cool, right? Because people can click that. Have a virtual machine, test out whatever program they want to test out because they don't want it to affect their main computer until they know how to use it. And it just takes all of the work out of it for them, right? They don't have to learn how to use VirtualBox or VMware or any of that. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of a thing that would, because I do a lot of security stuff, right? And I think it's important that people know how to test things outside of their main system. And it becomes challenging to teach someone how to use, hypervisors or virtual machines. But yeah, that sandbox thing I thought was really cool for just the average Joe, right? I'm not sure if you've ever actually used that or not, but.
I haven't used the sandbox function, but would that work similarly? Like, would I be able to run like an instance of Linux in there? Like, would I be able to set up like as if so I could? And I remember back in the day, I feel like I used to be able to run Linux in a virtual machine, but it would still have access to my network and everything. I mean, I could still like run the Linux inside there. And that was kind of like I didn't use that very much because I preferred to just do a real dual boot where I would literally switch operating systems, so I would have certain, because I like access to the repositories. I like to have access to the open source stuff, but then I also need my Windows machine, to do legitimate Windows things, right? And so I don't want them to cross over that much, but it seemed like there was a solution where I could run Linux inside of a virtual machine in my Windows computer. And I feel like there were still some limitations there. But can you run over any of that with me? Do you know if you can run Linux in there? Is it just a Windows sandbox?
Yeah, I'll tell you how to do that, but I will say Windows Sandbox is strictly Windows. So what it does is if you have Windows 10 or Windows 11, so whatever flavor of Windows you have, if you click Windows Sandbox, within 5 to 10 seconds, it takes the operating system you're on. It just creates a virtual machine of that, right? So the benefit of Windows Sandbox is you literally don't need any knowledge of virtual machines at all. You just click a button and you have it, right? So unfortunately, the downfall of it is you can't do other operating systems, right? But for that though, I don't know if you've ever messed with, VMware is great, but it can be confusing to the newcomer because you may not sure what virtual or VMware application you need, and you might get roped into paying money for it when you don't need to, and yada yada yada. So in that case, what I tell people to do is use VirtualBox because VirtualBox is an open source virtual machine application, and that does run on Windows, right? And VirtualBox is really cool. You just go to like the Ubuntu website, for example, or Canonical website, for example, and just download Ubuntu, and you start up VirtualBox and you just hit new. I mean, there's a little more to it, right? But you basically just hit new. You select the Ubuntu download you select it or downloaded, and within minutes you have a Linux system running. So Windows Sandbox, the benefit is it literally takes 2 seconds to run, but the downfall is it's only for when it only runs the Windows operating system you're running. But yeah, I would say VirtualBox would be the next go-to thing for anybody that wants to run any virtual machine stuff. It's just easy to use, it's open source.
Well, cool. Yeah, I haven't really thought about all that kind of stuff in a while. I've just been using the Windows machine just straight up, you know. But I'm trying to wrap my mind around all this, all the stuff that's coming around with Cardano, like Eiken and all these things. I've been thinking about firing up a Linux box again. So,
Man,
but.
you should check you should just download VirtualBox and go just Google download Ubuntu 22.04 LTS and give it a shot, man. I mean, it is trust me, if you do that, you'll be able to do it in just a couple of hours. You'll have no problem with even if you had zero knowledge, and I love it, man. It's great. It's great. Now, I mean, VMware is great too, but for example, you can download VMware Workstation Player. Now, I think you can run like one VM in it at a time. But I think it used to be VMware Server. But then, if you don't know what for the average person, right? If they don't know what they're doing, they might say, "Wow, I need to pay that $250, a year or whatever it is for regular VMware Workstation." So there's weird things about VMware for someone brand new to virtualization where that's why I would say VirtualBox, right? But you should really check out VirtualBox and let me know what you think, because I think I mean, it's great. I mean, that's what I'm doing all my YouTube videos on now is VirtualBox, and I have, two Ubuntu systems and two Windows systems on there, and yeah, I think it just works really flawlessly, right? Because I just load the ISO or the image for it, and it just sets everything up the way it needs to be. I mean, I could go in there and mess with things and modify stuff, but yeah, it just works, right? But
I believe I introduced you to Delta. He spent a little time in your space on occasion, and I think he runs. I think he actually sets up stake pools in a virtual environment, which is kind of crazy to me. So I guess they're all sharing the same actual resources. So I don't know how well that works, but I've heard that you can actually spin up Cardano stake pools in virtual environments, and people can actually delegate to them and things like that. It's really crazy.
I did that too when I created my first stake pool on the test net just to see how it worked. That's how I did it. I had a block producer and a relay on a in VirtualBox on two VMs. I mean, it works great too. The thing is, like, all of my systems in my office, every one of them has 64 gigs of RAM, 2 TB drives has, but the average, most people don't have that, right? They probably buy a computer with 16 gigs of RAM, right? So you're not gonna run it on that, right? It's not gonna happen. Because the first Cardano node you run in a virtual machine with 16 gigs of RAM, that's it.
I mean, I was thinking, as in terms of being light on resources and things like that, if you could get it to run dependably, then and assuming that you were just running one, kind of virtually on a machine until you get some delegation, and then I assume you would set up another machine to. But if you're just trying to get a feel for, like, am I going to be able to get delegators? I mean, does that seem like a cool way to spin it up, or does it seem kind of
Hell yeah. Yeah, I
janky?
mean, definitely on a test net, right? But I mean, I would say for any, and that's the thing about like Windows Sandbox or VirtualBox or anything, right? If, I mean, the answer is yes, right? Because, I would never do that on, for one, I mean, you're either going to have your own system to do it that you pay money for, or you're going to have to pay money to a cloud provider like DigitalOcean or AWS or Linode or something. And so you're incurring a lot of cost right there. when you're not sure if it's even going to work out for you or not. I mean, I would say, yeah, man. Virtualizing it to start off with is totally not a bad idea at all, especially in terms of, you're not messing with your own system, so if you do something wrong, you can just restart, right? You can take snapshots of the VM. So if you change something and it doesn't work, you can always revert. The cost there is very minimal, especially if you already have a system with the right amount of resources. I mean, I think that's a great idea. Yeah. That's how I started out too. I mean, like I said, right? I mean, I started out with VMware Workstation 16, and I spun up two Ubuntu VMs in there, and I started making Cardano nodes, right? Because I knew I didn't want to pay $200 a month to a cloud provider, and I didn't want to buy a dedicated server or system to do this when I didn't know if it was going to work out, like I wanted to keep doing it, or if I'd be able to learn how to do it, all that stuff, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a good option to just jump in and get your feet wet and figure out, get used to it, get your sea legs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, man, I'm gonna start scheduling these spaces again. The last 2 weeks, I've been like when I put up my project in Catalyst, right? My idea was I would do about like 10 hours per week of mine. I would take 10 hours of my own time and run this project, right, per week. The last few weeks has been like 20 hours every week between different teams and individuals and so forth. And so I've kind of lost sight of running my Twitter spaces. So yeah, I don't know. Do you have an idea for like the what would you say in the community for all the different Twitter spaces you join? Like the time and day of the week is the most effective, if you had to pick that.
I would say doing, of course, today's Super Bowl Sunday, so everybody's a little pulled away at the moment. And honestly, you've already stated before that you're very aware of this, that people aren't really fully dedicated to security spaces. They would rather go degen into the next rug pull. They'll pile in 350 deep into a space about rug pulls. Or whoever they think is politically incorrect today or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I would say just going off of what I've seen in the Twitter sphere in terms of spaces is you got to make the headline real provocative. So you could call it anything Web 2, Web 3, blockchain security, UFOs, and drama, and then
Okay.
you would probably get like 100 people in here just to figure out how Web 2, Web 3, blockchain security, and UFOs all relate to the drama.
Yeah.
And then just
I might pay you some money to give me headlines like that.
yeah, and then just to spice things up, we could be slightly derogatory toward each other, and I could be like, "Hey, bro, shut up." And then you're like, "No, man, I'm serious. Virtual machines are actually good for you and they help you do this, da 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 da." And then we could be all combative. And I'd be like, "No, man, that's a stupid idea." And I challenge everybody down in the audience down there to come up and prove me wrong. And then now that gets them involved. And now they want to come up and they want to share their opinions on why they think the drama and the spaceships and the trash bags in space and the whatever.
So I mean that's so like I mean that's depressingly fucking true. Like it's just depressingly true.
And I'm only being halfway serious right now, but honestly, you asked for my I don't
I mean
think it
it's
matters
you're
what time
right.
it is. If it's just like if it's an inflammatory something about some nonsense, you're gonna have 350 people in here. You'll onboard so many people, it's crazy.
I mean, I think you're 100% right, man. I see that shit I see it all of the time, and I'm like, and I always tell myself like I will never get to that. Like with YouTube too, with my YouTube videos, right? Like I probably like some of my videos have 17 views. And then I did like my first YouTube short last week, right? I was telling my wife I'm gonna do this quick YouTube short. I was actually at a bookstore with her, and I'm not a book person, so she's looking around books and I'm bored. So I go find this little tiny book where you can like write down passwords, your network information, and other stuff. So I bought it and I did a YouTube short on it. I mean, within minutes, that thing had like 200 views, and I'm like, people have zero attention span nowadays. This is probably the most useless thing I've done a video on ever. I don't have that many, probably 10 videos, right? But that's the most useless thing I've done so far. And it had by far the most views. And I'm like, what is, I don't get it. But to your point, right? Like it's people are all about that, whatever controversy stuff. They have no attention span, all of that stuff, right? But I'm like, I told myself
What's
I
your
will not make a
experience?
YouTube video with like some, what do you call it when you put something on the, the image for your YouTube video, not engagement farming, but
Oh, you talking about the thumbnail? The thumbnail on the. Well, I mean, I guess that would be, if you do kind of think about like which of these thumbnails is going to be the one that gets people to click, right? It's going to be the most inflammatory looking one or whatever, or the one that's most on topic, I guess, would actually be a good philosophy there. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call that engagement farming. It's just engagement. I would just call
Yeah, you're
that.
just engaging, yeah. Because
Properly, I call that just proper presentation of your media, I don't know.
proper presentation, yeah. I mean, you're right that I needed, I don't know. I need because I don't care if I, my goal is not to have a huge following or have a bunch of fan people or anything like that or to monetize YouTube or anything. I just want to spread the stuff I'm doing, right? So more people get some value. So the right people find it that get value out of it. But you can't do that if I'm just straightforward, right? Like if I'm just like, I'm going to tell you about this, people are like, I don't care, but
Yeah,
you're right. If I,
let's do an experiment. If go up there and change the title right now to UFOs drama, and then right before and then anything Web 2, Web 3, blockchain security. It's so like add the words UFO and drama up there. Let's just see how many people drop into the room. I'm curious.
how do you do that?
I don't know. I guess you would. I don't know. I haven't hosted that many spaces, but I know that
I guess I have to retweet it.
the title can be changed. I know that.
Okay.
I'm not sure how.
Let me see. Let me look here. I'm gonna see if I can and do that. Adjust settings, maybe. Yeah, let's see here. I'm looking. I gotta open it up here. Dude, I actually don't know how to do that.
Well, you don't have to do that, but I know it can be done.
That'd be so much fun though. I would really
I
like
was
it.
gonna
Oh,
say
adjust settings. Oh, I had to unmute you. Whoops. You might have to unmute yourself. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, okay. I'll have to look that up later, and I'll try that next time.
yeah,
I'll try
all good.
that when I
I
do
was
my
just.
space next week. I'll do something like that, put in some crazy headline, and see how
I'm just being cheeky, but it's like you kind of have to like look at okay, this all the spaces that are filled up with 350 people today are all talking about UFOs apparently. So
Yeah.
and it, but then you got to think like, are those really the people I want to draw in? I don't know. I'm not sure.
You have a good point. Yeah.
Now, have you heard of ADA hackers? It's an NFT
No.
project. It's part of Santo's testnet. Do you know who Santo is? He does
Yeah,
like
he
the
reached out to me
platform.
before. Yeah.
So now he's got an NFT project that he's using to fund to provide liquidity for the testnet coins, for the liquidity on the DEXs. And it's
Right.
also it's going to it's kind of the what he, the proceeds from this NFT sale are kind of getting split off into different whatever. So but one of them part of it is going toward the testnet coins. And so I was I don't know, I was trying to think if there was some way to maybe some cross partnership with them, because I mean they're about security, you're about security, right?
Right.
He sends people, they send people out on quests to like learn Eiken and like go test this testnet, this project that's on testnet, and any bounty that you catch there, you'll get extra testnet tokens over here, blah blah blah. So they're trying to gamify, they're trying to get people involved in, you know, testing, you know, on the test net and just getting people involved in wanting to learn more about how it all works. And, you know, so people come in because they want, you know, buy ADA, number go up, right? And then before you know it, you're a member of the community, you've joined some of these, you start to know people and you start to have these conversations, and then you're like, hey, well, you know, what can I do to help the network? You know, like, what can I actually do to grow around here? You know, and then I feel like this is something that he's actually encouraging people to do that. And so I think if you were to somehow, you know, at least interact with that community as it grows, maybe, you know, you would end up with more security minded people in here. And you could you could use your platform to not only disseminate information, but you get it into the minds of people who are super interested in that stuff, or at least he's trying to cultivate that type of a community over there, people that are interested in learning more about how the back end works and all that, you know, writing their own smart contracts and things like that. And so you'd have a little bit of, you know, you'd have those people retweeting your space, and, you know, so if there was maybe join their Discord, and, you know, you could have some kind of cross marketing where he's pushing out your content and you're pushing out, you know, I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, but,
I mean, I think that's people helping each other out. That's the way I look at that.
Yeah. It seems like it would be like a symbiotic relationship in a way, you know.
He's the guy that runs Santo Node, right?
Santo Node. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. He actually reached out to me a month ago. I think he was on another space with me or something, and said he would be happy to help promote my project through his stuff, and I responded to him kind of generically, and we just haven't synced up since then. So I'm glad you reminded me of that, because I need to reach back out to him for that, because that would be, yeah, I think that'd be a great thing.
Another person you could reach out to is Pyro. Do you know who Pyro is?
Yeah.
He's in a lot of spaces. He's running the social side for this project right now, it seems like. He's kind of out there shaking hands and making the partnerships and things like that. Santo's not a real social person, as if you've ever listened to him speak.
yeah.
his mind works a certain way, and that's cool. Like, once you get to know him, you realize kind of, okay, all right. So you know, you're not real good with the kissing hands and shaking babies side of things. I get it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and so maybe reach out to Pyro and then, just kind of feel it out, how maybe they could, you know, generate more traffic to your security discussions, and at the same time, maybe they could set up a channel in their Discord where people could propose questions and you might be able to answer them or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whatever you're comfortable with. I mean, I know that you've only planned to spend 10 hours of your time week, you know, with this project.
Well, I'm already spending like 15 or 20 hours a week now, so why not just keep going? You know, because honestly, I mean, I don't mind working, right? If I got to work more, that's great. But, you know, if this thing blows up and becomes more of a thing, that's wonderful. You know, maybe I haven't really told that many people this, but, you know, after the Catalyst part of it is over at the end of October, I wouldn't mind turning this into a full fledged thing. You know, get rid of everybody likes to get rid of their Web 2 job, right? So, you know, that would be the idea situation, right? But
right. So right now, while you've got the Catalyst funding, use that to kind of, you know, bootstrap your content creation and get in the swing, get kind of a format together of you know, ways to monetize. You know, you could get I want to say partnerships, but yeah, you know, sponsorships. You know what I mean? Like, you might be able to partner up with Copper Seed Safe. You know, and so
I'm actually doing a YouTube video with him on Wednesday. He reached out to me for that, so we're going to do something like that. And I'm going to share it out. So,
yeah,
not to interrupt you, but yeah.
So I'm just freestyling right now. I'm just riffing, honestly. I mean,
I appreciate it, man.
Other projects in the community that would also need a little hand up. Everybody needs a little hand up, and anytime, you know, you can work symbiotically and create efficiencies. You know, it's less money that you have to shell out for promotion. It's less, you know, and everybody's trying to do it organically. And the way you do it is you forge these, you know, you have to show up, and you got to amplify, and you have to, realize who the good people to get in bed with, as far as like what we work together. We're on different sides of the same coin. Copper Seed Safe is about keeping your seed phrase safe, and I'm over here talking about how to keep your hardware safe, and I'm talking about, and so it goes perfectly hand in hand, without stepping on anyone's toes. So people who are being onboarded to the community, they might not know about a Copper Seed Safe. It are people that that are trying to learn about how it all works, I mean, you got to think about that while you're creating some of the content that you're creating, is that, some of this stuff, there's so many billions of people that don't know anything about Web3 right now. And that content that you're creating on YouTube is going to be out there forever, right? You're going to leave it up as long as you want to leave it up, as long as it's relevant. As soon as it becomes irrelevant, hopefully you'll take it down,
Right.
If the network changes in some way or something like that, suddenly it's less relevant and you need to deprecate that. Right. So it's about keeping, it's about good curation of content, creating content. And then, once you've got that out there, it's about cultivating those eyeballs and, forging those partnerships and, maybe every once in a while, once you've released something really cool that you're proud of, you go on Cardano Over Coffee and you just say, hey, everybody, go in on a banter Monday. And while you're up there speaking, just say, hey, I've tagged something up at the top here. And would you guys retweet this? I think it's valuable content for the community and da, da, da. And I'm sure that everybody in the room would be happy to amplify that. Right. And then that gets more eyeballs on you. And that's free and organic way to appeal to the minds that are curious about those topics. Right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm just, like I said, I'm just kind of freestyling, since you asked.
Honestly, all of your stuff so far is, I mean, that's great feedback and that's great suggestions, man. Cause, to your point, right. People like me are trying to do it organically and, not cross, own personal, ethical lines and stuff, right. To get this spread. Right. So I have to do things like that. I got to do that legwork and, yeah, this is supposed to be me talking about security stuff, but I got another question for you. You mentioned something to me a long time ago when I first came across you and about joining with my Epoch Sec account versus Holy Macaroni account, right? Now, my dilemma there is my Holy Macaroni account has the most visibility, right? My Epoch Sec account does not, right? So, my dilemma back and forth, internal dilemma, is using my Holy Macaroni account to spread my Epoch Sec effort here, right? And then I'm really just using my Epoch Sec account to keep organized with my Twitter spaces and stuff like that. But I'm wondering if I should try to transition over to using the Epoch Sec account more often than the Holy Macaroni account, and maybe that would help spread things. But
My advice is that when you make a presentation in another space, like say Cardano Over Coffee or one of those spaces that I've seen you in, you should do the presentation. When you're speaking, you should speak as Epoch Sec. But okay. You should, on your computer, where you're not going to be speaking, you should have your Holy Macaroni account logged in and in the space. Right. And then that way you can retweet out that space from your Holy Macaroni account. And you can retweet it out from your Epoch Sec account. And the people who are there listening to your security talk will be following the Epoch Sec account. So you're going to be growing it organically through people who are interested in Epoch Sec specifically. And you'll also be using your Holy Macaroni account to promote to the people who already know about you, right? And then, of course, when they get in there and they realize that you're speaking under Epoch Sec, they'll probably all end up following Epoch Sec as well, right? Just because, some of them, we were all introduced to you as Holy Macaroni. And then it was shortly after that that you started, your Epoch Sec account. And so that leading edge after getting your Catalyst funding and everything, when everybody was curious who the hell is Holy Macaroni, when you were out there making the splash, we all followed you on Holy Macaroni, right?
Right.
So when you're presenting in a space, I would say use your Epoch Sec account, but keep your Holy Macaroni account in there. So you want to have that one on your phone, right? And then you want to have your Holy Macaroni set up on your computer, and then it'll just be in the space. You know what I mean? And you could probably use your Holy Macaroni account to record the space onto your computer if you want that content, right? Then you can splice down your content recorded on your computer. So you could actually be recording that from your Holy Macaroni account while you're speaking on your Epoch Sec account. So there's actually a utility that you could perform there above and beyond marketing. Like, you could use it to actually record your presentation, and then you could snip that down and use it in other places. You know, you could you could make little snippets of your taglines or whatever you thought was cool from that talk, or whatever. You know, you could kind of piece the content down a little bit and then release that on, I don't know, one of these other platforms, for the people with short-term attention span disorder. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's actually kind of what I'm glad you said that, because that's kind of what I thought, like, if I did do anything different, that's maybe what I should do. Yeah, man. I mean, it's kind of cool, because two things I wasn't aware. I didn't think this many people would reach out to me so quickly, but at the same time, getting more people involved is equally as challenging, and I did not expect that, right? but yeah. Hey, not going to be here much longer, but I guess I'll share something else I was going to mention earlier to people. I'm actually going to do a video on it pretty soon, too. Have you heard of Yubico or YubiKey?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah, so it's this hardware device. It's basically, think about just a USB removable media, or USB removable drive, right? But it's like the same size of it, but it's hardware. It's multi-factor authentication, but it's a hardware device, right? I've seen some people lately where they've had accounts compromised or wallets compromised, things like that, because they're sharing certain information or accidentally running a malicious executable or something like that, and they're using just plain passwords, right? Which the day and age we're in, using just a straight up password is just a no-go right off the start, right? If you're using just a plain password for something, that's just bad. And so people use multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication, right? They use maybe Bob's website that they go to has something to where you log in with a password and it'll send you an SMS or a text message with a one-time passcode, right? There's problems with that, though, because if you don't have SIM lock enabled, someone could also compromise your SIM and SIMs, something called they call SIM swapping, where they socially engineer your service provider to get them to send a SIM card, and they plug it in, and all of a sudden now they're getting your text messages, right? So they bypass that two-factor authentication. And then you have Google Authenticator, which is great as well, right? But then if you want to go further and not just have software authentication, then you could use hardware two-factor authentication. That's where I thought YubiKey was kind of interesting. Lathisen from DripDrops actually mentioned to me a couple of months ago, and I wasn't aware of it. So I ordered one to kind of demo it. So I think later this week or next week, depending on what I decide to do, I'm going to show how to set that up. But basically, you can use it to, it's a hardware device. So, like, I'll give scenarios. If you want to log into your Windows computer or Linux computer, so you put in your username and password, you have to plug this thing into your computer physically before it'll let you log in, right? So if someone steals your computer but they don't have your YubiKey, then they can't log into your system, right? But then you can also use it for all these third-party services too. So a lot of services like Google, and I can't think of all. If you go to the YubiKo website, you can see all the different things that are support all the different websites that are supported, but every application generally has something in your settings to enable other authentication, right? So you can enable YubiKey authentication, and basically when you log in that website, you have to, not only do you have to have the password and or your authenticator one-time passcode, then you'll also have to have that YubiKey, right? So you have to plug it in your system, you tap it, right? So you just tap the device and it'll authenticate you in, right? So I don't know, I thought that was pretty cool. Right, there's kind of different versions of the YubiKey though. One you can get like t for $25, where it's just something called, I think it's UF2 or U2F, right? To where you can basically use it to log into your system or something. But then you could pay $65 and or $50 or something, and you can get that one to where it'll work with your other applications and stuff, where it'll support one-time passcodes and stuff like that, right? So, yeah, I just
Sounds
think I.
interesting. I
Yeah, I
haven't.
think it's pretty cool because a lot of people are starting to use multi-factor authentication with Google Authenticator and stuff like that, but I don't think a lot of people understand that there's a hardware option out there too, right? Like we talk about using hardware devices for your crypto wallets, right? So, you know, so there's hardware devices out there for authentication to your regular websites and stuff too, right?
Now, typically, if I'm using a hardware device, I would expect that to be able to be used off network. So, if it was a computer that I wanted to not have connected to the internet, I would like to use that hardware option. It sounds to me like this might need to still be connected to a network to authenticate, or does it authenticate with your cell phone, or what's the communication method, and how does it? Or is it
Yeah,
just like
so
an old school encryption key? Because I mean, like, I feel like those have been around a while.
well, it's like, so the YubiKey is by Yubico, right? But it's called the YubiKey. So I guess by design, the device itself does not need network connectivity, right? So if you're using it to log into your Windows system or your Linux system, you don't have to be on any network, right? You just log in, you plug in this device into your USB or USB-C port, and then you tap the device, and then it'll authenticate you in, right? So it needs no network authentication at all. The network authentication, or I mean network access, right? But that's why I was kind of iffy about the answer, because if you're logging into Google, then you obviously have to be on some network, right? You have to have internet access, right? But the device itself does not need that at all, right? So,
Got you.
you
Okay,
know,
I understand.
and then I mean, there are risks, because if someone does this and they're not fully aware of everything, then they could be misled, right? So if you go to, you know, Nancy's home network website or whatever, and you have a password to log into her website, then you have your YubiKey, right? That sounds great, right? Because now you have a hardware device locally, you don't need it on the network, technically. But what if, you know, in her application, she has a thing to where if you lost your whatever hardware device you have, right? Because typically they're agnostic to YubiKey, it's just they might allow you to connect a hardware device for extra authentication, right? Agnostic to YubiKey, because there are other options. Well, so say they allow you to do that, but then they have a feature, they have not a feature, but an option in there to say, hey, if you lost your thing that you're using for extra authentication, you know, send me an email with a reset passcode, right? Well, then that completely defeats the entire purpose of the hardware device, right? Because then if a bad actor got a hold of your system or your account and your password and they logged in, well, then they could, and you know, right? Then they could just reset that through, you know, they could just get that one-time passcode through your email, or if they SIM swapped you, they could just get it through an SMS, right? So they could completely bypass that hardware device. So it's not a flaw of the hardware device, it would be a flaw of whatever application you're using, right?
Yes, I think I followed you there.
Yeah, I got all kind of long-winded with that, right? But it really just depends on the thing that you're adding your YubiKey to. You know, if they have things set up right?
I don't know how many viewers you have to get stuff like that for free. But I bet if you had contacted them and said, hey, I'm a security professional and I'm going to do an unboxing of this and a review, I bet they probably would have sent it to you for free.
Well, you know, I might do that. I might reach out to them because they have like three or four other versions of this, right? So they have one called an HSM, which is for like enterprise data center appliances. And they have one that is like, that has near field communication or NFC on it. So they have other devices. So I might reach out to them and say, well, if you want me to go over all of them, you know, here's my address, you know?
Right. Or maybe after you make the first video and see how much, you know, interest it generates, if it's a significant amount of interest, then you can be like, look, this is how your first video did with me. So, you know, hook me up with the rest of them and I'll do the rest of them. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure how all that kind of stuff works. I'm not sure how those partnerships work, but you know,
man, I have no idea either.
You know, it doesn't hurt to ask. You know what I mean? You're
I'm with you on that.
We're offering to promote their stuff, so I mean, you're technically doing them a favor. You know?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, it doesn't hurt to ask. Yeah. Yeah, but if you haven't heard that, man, you should go to their website, check them out. I just got mine in, and I've already set it up and everything, but I haven't worked on the video or anything. But I mean, if you're curious, you know.
Yeah, I'll check them out. Cool. I'll go to their website and read about it. But I guess I feel like I'm holding you up, man. So it's, you know, it's always cool to drop in and, you know,
yeah.
I'm glad you're doing the thing, man. So
keep up. I appreciate you, Gold Rush. Yeah, I'm cooking a brisket, so I just pulled that off and
I'm going to get the eating here jealous. Soon. All right, man. You enjoy that brisket, bro. Try to catch some football today if you can.
You too, man. You have a good Sunday.
All right. Have a good one.
Take care.